Welcome to MMA Roadshow, episode number 145. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee? Well, damn it, not only is he with me, we are at the Casa de Cold Coffee, chilling at your house. How's it going, brother?
I'm doing good, doing well. Yeah, welcome to the homestead. You know, I would lie and say that I cleaned up for you, but you know.
Well, we are at home in Las Vegas this week. It is a very rare off week in MMA. It's crazy. I mean, there's no UFC, there's no Bellator, there's no Professional Fighters League, there's no RFA, LFA. There's no, you know, I mean, there's none of that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a wild week. We're getting to enjoy the holiday a little bit. So I do not blame you for not cleaning up for me one bit. It looks like you're in kind of a like that spring cleaning, new year kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
like
I feel
like you're like mid-rearrangement of some stuff in here.
This yeah.
Just to set the scene here, we're in what I guess you would kind of call your studio,
yeah,
right?
My studio.
I mean, it's basically like a big, you know, master living area that you have taken over. But over here, you got stuff for green screen setups.
Mm-hmm.
You got professional lighting and stuff, which, I mean, looks like you could shoot some pretty seedy stuff in here over in this part of town,
you know?
right around the corner from Palace Station.
You know, that's why D-Dub used to always come over to this neighborhood. You know, I actually was filming some scenes with D-Dub and his mistress.
Oh, wow. That's how we're starting 2018, huh? Okay.
No, but yeah, I mean, just kidding, D-Dub. I won't ever show that footage. In here, yeah, I tore out the old Xbox. I'm setting up a little gym in the garage, so that's going to go out there and be our entertainment system. I'm not going to run cable out to the garage, so we at least can have a Netflix or whatever streaming to kind of, take our mind off the fact that we're actually working out and all that good stuff. And then, yeah, my gear is over there from, past events. It's kind of the staging area. So when we go to events, you know, I'll put everything, get it all together, and then it moves over to the door, and then it goes out. And when it comes back, it kind of looks like that. It just kind of lumps onto the floor.
Yeah. I'm a little less disorganized on my gear when I'm at home. I feel like I used to make sure everything was all nice.
Oh, and, yeah.
But we just would just travel so damn much. I feel like I'm just like,
that's it. That's it. When you get tired sometimes, I mean, like long days, you know, when it gets to that Sunday, you get home or whatever, and you just take it out and you're like, I don't even want to look at this for like days,
mm-hmm.
you know. And this week we actually got to have it. You know, it was kind of weird, you know, having the week off, you know. It's funny because you feel like, oh, I know there's things I want to catch up and, oh, I'm going to go out and do this. And, you know, but it's like literally the first 2 days I just want to sleep and just sit, you know.
I didn't do nothing, man. I'm not
going to
lie.
That's the best part. I mean, fight weeks are long days. I mean, as glorious as it might seem to, oh, I want to be on the event, I want to be this. And again, granted, it is good. It's good
fun
to be there. But,
no question about it.
You know, you're looking at 12, 14-hour, some days longer than that hour days. And
every single day
in a row, you just kind of want to just not do anything when you get back.
And
so,
those damn early weigh-ins.
Brutal. They ruined the Fridays.
That used to be our week, man. You know, we'd grind on Wednesday and Thursday, knowing you could sleep in on Friday.
Yep.
Get yourself recharged for the afternoon weigh-ins, which are pretty easy, to be honest with you.
Yep.
And then, you know, then you might even go out that night before the fights. And now, it's brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I don't want to sit here and complain. We have some of the best jobs in the world, and I'll never forget that. But it is more grinding than easy. But it sounds like you're getting back in the gym. I'm going to try. I got to. I turned 40 this year, bro.
Yeah.
In March. March 15th, man. So we're talking about 2 months away.
Wow.
So it's not like I can even put in that much work before then. But I don't know. Like 2018, I'm turning 40. I feel like now or never, man. My kid looked at me the other day, and my kid literally said, "What happens when you and mommy are dead?" And I'm like,
oh, shit.
What?
I thought he was going to say, like, something else. Like,
no, he's like,
I thought it was going to be the birds and bees shit or something.
Oh, well, he did touch on that a little bit. But, he was like, what happened? You know, I'm my only family. What happens when you and mommy are dead? And I was like, first of all, don't talk about that. Yeah. And I was like,
it's not going to happen anytime soon. That's when you're like, well, Eli, you might have your own family by then. You know, unless he's like, nah, I'm just going to be the.
It's because I want your stuff.
That's what it was. He's like, can I have your car?
Does that mean that I can use your TV anytime I want it? Oh god.
Well, I mean, he is getting that age, man, especially, you know, with him now. I hear stories, you know, the guys told me when Sandu and those guys came over, he wanted to show off all of his hitting and striking skills.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only going to get more so.
Yep.
So I mean, you're going to have to get in shape just because you're going to be the natural sparring partner at the house.
It's hard, man. He beats up on me. But I do. I want to be able to chase him around the park and go play soccer with him and that sort of stuff. So I gotta drop some LBs this year.
This is the year, man. We gotta do it. We keep saying it's like this year, but you're right. I turned 44 this year, you know, and I feel you. I think it's natural to start feeling your mortality. I think we probably should have thought about it before, but you know, at that point when you're knee deep in 16-hour days and just trying to get your career going, you know, you don't even think about that stuff.
Nope.
You know, especially being over, workaholics as we tend to be, you know, a lot of times you can only do so much, you know. I think that's good. I mean, we resolved that this will be the year to start getting off our ass. I mean, especially using the connections that we have to, you know, get the training done that we need to do, point in the right directions, you know. I was talking to Angelo Reyes earlier, you know, striking coach of Frank Mears and Anna Houlatan's, and, you know, trying to get tips on him, like, you know, because I want to get a boxing bag set up, you know,
it's a good workout right there.
Go work out the arms, you know, and just kind of work out some frustrations and stuff, you know, asking him things. And I know we know people in all kinds of elements, you know, different disciplines of martial arts, you know, that we can pick up on things. And I'm sure some listeners now listening to this will throw some ideas our way as well. But, you know, we'll have to keep it in balance with the hashtag Frosty Beverages.
Well, I was going
to
say, and keeping in line with our commitment to health and our commitment to bettering ourselves, as we sit down at 1 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon, we're enjoying a Ballast Point home game.
Yeah, delicious Fathom IPA.
Back to the Ballast Point home game. Unfortunately, our beloved Boomers is no more. Heck, you sent me a picture of the thing all stripped down to nothing. But that does allow us to enjoy our Ballast Point home game. And today, the Fathom IPA, India Pale Ale. I'll just tell you what they say about it.
Since I
don't have quite the refined palate that they do. It says, you know, Fathom IPA highlights our favorite characteristics of the West Coast IPA style. This crisp and clean brew features a touch of malt on the surface with an ocean of zesty orange and piney hops below. The result is a refreshing, easy drinking IPA with just the right amount of depth.
I get it. I definitely, after you clarified the orange, because the first one I was thinking it was like a pineapple. I definitely tasted a citrusy edge to it. But yeah, man, it's good. I mean, what's nice about this as opposed to some other IPAs, some IPAs can be very off-putting to somebody's palate if you're not used to IPAs because it's such a punch in the mouth.
Yep.
Sometimes it hits you at different like sour points and different areas of the tongue. But this one was kind of mellowed out. I mean, it was sort of soury, but
it's like,
you know,
the lager of IPAs, man. It's like you can sit here and just drink this, man.
Yeah,
it's,
I was actually just like, I did ask if we wanted to get glasses so I could feel like we were fancier, you know, but now we're just drinking from the can. I found myself like gulping, you know, just
hope that's okay, Andrew, that we're drinking from the can. Our buddy Andrew.
I'm sure Andrew's probably like, no, fellas, a glass. But I mean, you know, it's not like it's been sitting in a can forever, so we're only tasting aluminum or anything. But, I mean, it's delicious. And if that's the case, it's only going to taste better when we put it in a glass. But I dig it, man. I really haven't had one of the Ballast Points. I'm not just trying to say that because Ballast Point's been wonderful enough to give us some products. But I like it.
I do, too.
I mean, the shit's not cheap. Let's be real.
It's
like,
not.
I tried to when Fiasco had his birthday.
But if you just want to do like a couple years of podcast and happen to meet the guys, you can get a really good deal on it.
Then it works. But, yeah, I tried to go out and get a 6-pack or something. I was going to get a 12-pack for Fiasco at his birthday. And it was, I shit you not, it was like $15.99 or something for a 6-pack. And I was like, holy cow. I mean, granted, they put great ingredients and all that good stuff, but I balked. I got him like a big liter of some gin, some Seagram's gin that I wasn't even sure
Shame
was
on
good.
You.
I know.
Shame on you.
I know I backed down. So, I mean, but
you hear this, man, Andrew?
You know, I gotta learn to not let the price point dissuade me from it because
it's not PBR. It's not PBR.
It is not PBR. It is. It definitely kicks it up a notch. You know, I mean,
I found out they have a restaurant in Temecula.
Really?
And I'm going to be there in a couple weeks for Bellator. The week that you go to North Carolina, I'm going to Temecula for Bellator. I might have to stop by, check it out. They have
like a brewery slash?
Yeah, I don't think they actually brew on site, but I think it's like a restaurant that features their products.
Interesting.
I'm going to go check that out.
I bet they have some dishes made with it.
Shout out to Ballast Point. Shout out to our commitment to health.
But hey.
I mean, listen, a healthy, balanced lifestyle includes some day drinking, right?
I agree. I wasn't going to say what time it was. then you done let it out, let the cat out the bag.
Day drinking in moderation. Well, yeah. Listen, I figure I've got to work early tomorrow. Yeah. And it's
not like we're going to go hard.
Nah.
We'll see.
All right. Speaking of enjoying themselves, have you seen, were you shocked? Because I was. Dana White did a big interview with Yahoo Sports, man, a little over half an hour, about 35 minutes. Our man Kevin Ioli sit down with them on Skype, which is not surprising. Obviously, Kevin Ioli has been covering the UFC for a long time and has a good relationship with Dana White.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Dana White did it while he's on vacation in Thailand and took the time to do a more than 30-minute interview, it's so wild. I feel like Dana's finally kind of coming out of his shell maybe a little bit. You know, like after the sell, he kind of backed away for a while and really wasn't doing much media at all. And, you know, we talked to him both on and off record, and he kind of admitted, you know, he had some emotional times and it was really a difficult process for him. But now, I mean, here he is. He's on his damn vacation in Thailand and doing a big interview.
Yeah. When was the last time you didn't do some bit of work on vacation?
Oh.
I mean, granted, we're different. I mean, we definitely work hard. But that's the thing about Dana. Dana works nonstop as well. I mean, dude plays pretty damn hard. But he works hard, too, at least in the sense of this. Like, he's not going to go on vacation and turn his phone off.
Right.
I guarantee that'll never, ever happen. So I can see where maybe there was a point where he's like, oh, well, let me just knock this out. You know, I mean, he has a good relationship. He understands Yahoo still has a pretty big reach,
still big reach, yep.
So it makes sense that, hey, if we have some news, you know, let's throw something Kevin's way. Because Kevin is a good beat writer. I mean, Kevin works his butt off. I mean, this dude's been doing it for a long time.
Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame.
For him to still grind as much as he does, it's funny. Like, I still remember, I can't remember what event it was. Maybe it was the Mayweather-McGregor. Where we were at T-Mobile, and then they booted us out of the event, and Kevin was still outside working on the bench.
That's right.
You know, he could have easily just driven home, did whatever, but, you know, he wanted to get his story done, so he sat outside on a bench where he could still get the internet from the T-Mobile, and you're not going to find that from dudes that are just randomly doing the sport or that are just half-assing the sport. So he's definitely done his time, and he's constantly, I mean, he rags Dana sometimes. Dana loves to rag him as well, so I think
they weren't speaking for a while. You know, pretty recently, they weren't speaking for a while.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's good. I think, you know, they've kind of put an olive branch to each other. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, it's not like Kevin's going to, you know, pull words back or anything. But it's good that Dana reached out, and, I mean, it sucks. I would like to have been us.
I know. I was going to say, the only bad thing is because, you know, I've been working with UFC on getting another sit-down with Dana.
Yeah.
We're going to try to do those quarterly. That was the plan last year, was to do them quarterly, and then some things kind of happened behind the scenes where that fell apart. But trying for 2018 to do it quarterly. So, yeah, there was part of me that was like, good for Kevin, and part of me was like, damn it.
Yeah,
you know,
the first thing I thought was like, fuck, we could have interviewed.
Yeah, because
that.
I was trying to get something set up. We were trying to figure out what Dana's vacation schedule was because I wanted to get something done maybe before the St. Louis event, so we could just kind of like preview the first quarter and talk about all the highlights going in the first quarter. You know, do like we did last time where we talked about events, but then we also talked about just the biggest headlines. And that's what I want to do with them. Once a quarter, you know, get that time, and hopefully we'll be able to still make that happen. But, yeah, I was kind of bummed.
Yeah.
Kind of bummed. But good for Kevin.
Good for Kevin. And I'm glad Dana still, you know, does that. I mean, I know he typically but we see it happen. We see him reach out to ESPN and give little stories.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All of the stuff. So, I mean, I think Dana, you know, I still appreciate that he's willing to kind of still be the bad boy and let shit out that whether or not he's supposed to let it out at that point.
The PR team just grimaces.
And then the PR is
hear,
like, oh, how do we fix this? How do we fix this?
Like, that's the funny thing because, you know, PR, they'll have like, you know, complicated plan, not complicated, but they'll want to drop a story on a certain day in a certain outlet or whatever to get the most reach. You know, obviously, you know, you want to break your fights for Australia in the Australian papers. You want to break, you know what I mean? Like, but, you know, not only does it give the most eyeballs in the local market, but it also helps you develop a relationship with that media outlet. You know, like, hey, you know, we've given you a couple scoops. Like, now why don't you do a story for us?
Yeah.
You know, something like that. So, you know, they're trying to work those relationships and then Dana's just like, we did announce that GSP is sick and not fighting for the next 6 months, right? Like, no.
I mean, because they used to have, like, big whiteboards, and they'd have stuff planned out, like calendars, and just weird like bubbles leading to bubbles of this goes to this, goes to this, goes to this. And
look
I can
like
just
a crime
imagine
scene investigation.
Yeah, just like kinda like, all right, well, this is when we release this and then that allows us to do this, this, this. And I can imagine like after Dana does this thing, they just have to go in there and like, all right, motherfucker, just erase this, erase this, erase
the best,
this.
If you go back way back in the day and you look at when Jen Wink was still heading up PR, this is back when Dana, you know, almost every week would do like the scrums after every event, you know?
Yeah.
And Jen would actually just pull up a chair and sit behind him. And it was funny because, you know, obviously everybody's keyed in on Dana, but after a while I started just kind of like letting my attention drift a little bit and watch her. And it was so funny because she would have like a little notepad, like writing down like stuff he was saying so that she knew. And you could just see like when he'd break something that, that they had plans for, just kind of like, like shaking her head a little bit, like, ah, you weren't supposed to say that because it's going out on Monday.
I definitely think that they definitely had a stretch where they got him in check. They were like, all right, Dana, we got to pull back. And I think he was more than willing to kind of pull back as well. You know, he's never, you know, held his words back when he's been a little upset when people take him out of context. You know, it's so easy to do. And that's why I like how we a lot of time we'll put the videos and stuff out. We put the full thing out as opposed to just grabbing on, you know, a certain phrase or a certain instance. And, you know, we still do it from time to time, which – I don't know, but maybe that's better off the record, where it kind of upset me the other day when something that we had did, but, you know, I definitely voiced my displeasure.
I mean, you got to be responsible. We all want cookie-grabby headlines, but you got to make sure you're being fair.
Yeah.
And that doesn't go for Dana. That goes for anybody.
It goes for anybody. I mean? Yeah, definitely not just Dana, just anybody in general. You know, like, I want us to at least maintain that sense of an outlet that, you know, I don't want to just be clicky to be clicky, you know, like don't grab on that phrase because we're out on the ground. Mm-hmm. I'm facing these guys. And at the last event, you know, I got come up, two different UFC staffers came up to me on two different occasions talking about stories and stuff that we came out with,
right.
You know, voicing their displeasure in our angles and stuff like that. You know, it's like, I get it. It was like, you know, but you know, there was what came out, you know,
right.
It is what it is. Those are the stories or whatever. But, you know, I always like try to tell people, you know, and you, I know you say it all the time, you know, don't put anything out there that you're not willing to say in front of these people's faces. And that same goes for, see, the fucking cat's crazy. Literally just try to jump up on the table and grab papers or remote or whatever.
Wanted a little bit of that ballast point.
He wanted that ballast point fathom. He's like, wait, your description sounded delicious. but, you know, we're on the ground, you know, like we see these people, you know, it's one thing to be a keyboard warrior and say something and never have to be in front of people, you know. That's why, you know, I stress for any outlet, you know, careful of what you say and what you do, because if you're on the ground and you're in front of these people, they will come up to you,
yep.
And they will voice their displeasure.
I think that's good. I mean, I really do, and you're right. I say it all the time, but I do honestly live by that mantra, and I think, you know, people are always asking for advice, you know, what would you do? That is one thing I really do words to live by is do not write anything, tweet anything, say anything that you wouldn't say to somebody's face, man. Some of the stuff that I see that's, you know, with stories, where it's like taking something a little bit out of context, you know, for the sake of it, it makes it a good story, even though you know it's probably not exactly the truth or what, you know what I
right.
mean? I don't like that. And some of the snarkiness and stuff that we see, like, I just don't like, I mean, would you say that to somebody's face? Is that the way you would treat somebody?
Yeah.
Like, I just, it's not right to me. You know what I mean? It's okay to criticize. I mean, I know that for the most part, I think I'm a pretty positive guy. I mean, I try to be anyway. Like, that's kind of my energy. Or, you know, maybe sometimes I'm foolish about stuff or whatever, but I don't know. I like to look at things in a positive light and see the silver lining and things. And but I get that you don't always have to be that way, but you can criticize without being snarky and without being a jerk about it. You know what I mean? How would you talk to people's face? So anyway, well, listen, so let's dig into some of the stuff that was in there, because, you know, as New Year started, I'm not gonna lie, the first guy that got under my nerves was Conor McGregor, man. Those tweets came out that Conor's like, you know, effing beg me, and
yeah.
You know, like, I was just like, come on, man. Like, I tell you what, I guess I'm tired of the shtick, man. I'm tired of the I'm rich, beg me shtick. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm more of the, you know, especially like with what Habib did the other day and just how dangerous he looks and how much of a fighter Tony Ferguson is. Not that I don't love – I want to see Conor fight. That's not it. I do want to see Conor fight, but this just social media play and, you know, all this beg me, I got too much money. I'm kind of over it, dude. Like, if you don't want to fight because you made $100 million, I don't blame you, bro. Like, I don't want to fight, and I've never made a dollar fighting, and I don't want to get there and do it. You know what I mean? So if you've got $100 million sitting in the bank and you don't want to fight anymore, I'm cool with that. I'm totally cool with that. But if you're going to, you know, claim to be the champ and act like the champ and what, like, get in there and fight, man, because there's some good fights to be had right now in that division, and I'm just not interested in the, you know, get on your knees and beg me and I might fight. Like, I want to see you be like, I mean, I like the part where, like, man, that Dagestani's nothing, like, but then let me hear you say in the next breath and take your ass in the cage with me and let's prove it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there was a point. I mean, I love all the hype that he brings to things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the excitement of the fight weeks and stuff, but it's not just, I guess, not even just Conor. I think any sports athlete or any Hollywood person, anywhere where the ego starts standing out more so than what they're actually performing, what they're actually producing.
Right.
It just gets so distracting that I find myself just tuning it out. You
yes.
know, when he does his fighting and when he does his martial arts, I mean, that's all the hyped up shit that I need for me to just respect the dude.
Oh, that's amazing.
But when I hear him, just every other one's either now it's just an advertise for a product or, you know, beg me or this. I'm like, man, for someone that used to come off and try to portray himself as so humble, you know, you've went so far into what people say, don't let money change you. Don't let
yeah.
money change you. Now it's to the point, I get it, you know. He's already accomplished enough that his family, his life is set for money-wise.
Yes.
And now at
his
this
kids,
point, you
his
know.
His kids.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like, your legacy is set, you know. Now it's a matter of, you know, what people think of you as a human being. And, you know, I guess it's hard to separate that, too, because, you know, you want him to be this human being, but he is a sports person.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to sports, I think the type of mentality that you need to thrive and to go into that realm and let alone be very good at it is the same stuff as that self-belief. And how do you turn that off when you stop fighting?
That's true.
When you do the other
but,
stuff?
And because I've always said, I don't mind people being cocky. Like, if you're a cage fighter, if your job for a living is to lock yourself in a steel cage with another human being
yeah.
who has been training for the past 2 months to kill you,
yeah,
you probably ought to believe in yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm okay. I don't know. I guess it's just... just like, man, look at me. I came from nothing, and look who I am now. That's cool. Like, I want to see that.
Yeah.
Instead, it's just beg me to even get in there. Like, no, I want to see. Look, I became the king of the sport because I'm the greatest that's ever done it. And, you know, I'm going to sit your bitch ass down when we get in there. So, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm okay with it. I want to see him fight, man. I guess that's
yeah.
what I'm saying. I want to see him fight. But I guess the refreshing thing. So I was angry for a couple days because I was like, oh, my God, here we go again. But to hear this interview, that it sounds like Dana is very much on board with, like, listen, if Conor wants to sit out, that's cool, but we're going
to
strip him. You know what I mean? If
to.
He wants to fight, then we'll fight. But
yeah.
if he's not, then we'll do Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, and
yeah.
we'll do it for the real title.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that.
I mean,
let's keep moving forward.
Yeah. And that's been my biggest thing about what all these holding these different belts is just holding up the divisions. If Conor wants to fight, Conor can fight. Conor doesn't need a belt to put on these big fights.
No.
It's just Conor being Conor. You know, it doesn't matter if Conor is the lightweight champion, the featherweight champion, the heavyweight champion. It doesn't matter. People want to watch Conor McGregor fight, whether it be boxing or whether it be martial arts. So, but for the sake of the sport and the sake of the UFC, or just the legitimacy of the UFC as a real organization, you know, it'll all be taken care of itself, you know, especially if the whole Ali Act gets revisioned and you have to have people fighting and doing the right thing. You can't have these bouts that don't make any sense of fighting outside
right.
of weight classes and all this other stuff. But the fact is, I mean, just if they take it away from him, fine, just let it be done so the fact that the division can move forward. And if Conor ever wants to come fight, people are still going to buy it. You don't
Absolutely.
Need to have a belt around his waist for him to provide value. If that's what he needs to get in there and fight is to have it to be for a belt, then they could do just like what they did with Mayweather and just make up a fucking belt. We'll just make a money belt. You know, we'll just make whatever a belt. Because if he's not fighting within his division and it's always these one-off fights, then let's just take the belts out of the equation because they make no sense.
Maybe, you know, honestly, I mean, it sounds almost silly to a degree. And I've heard some people say that, hey, man, we'll just – you know, come up with a money belt or whatever. But you know what? It might not be the worst thing for him to just be stripped of the belt and pick fights that do make interest. You know, because like GSP, for instance, that you
yep.
know, he didn't need to come back and fight for a title. It just him coming back was story enough in itself. You know what I mean? So if Conor just is at a point where, hey, he only wants to fight once every 18 months or every 2 years or whatever it is, and he just wants to handpick the fight that's most interesting to him, That's cool. Maybe it just doesn't have to be for the belt. You know what I mean? Maybe you know, strip him of the lightweight title, and then if he wants to fight at 170, he can fight at 170. If he wants to do a 162-pound catchweight fight with somebody, I mean, would it matter to you if he picked a fight that was at 162 pounds? Like, of course not. You're still going to be like, this is a Conor McGregor fight. So
I mean, and for it seems to him, it's just about the dollar value.
Right.
You know, at this point, as long as he's reaching his price point and he's happy with it, that's fine. And I'm fine with that as well. You know, like, I don't care. The dude can make all the much money in the world. I just want the legitimacy of the sport to keep it real.
Right.
And I don't want people to keep thinking like, oh, well, who's fighting who? Wait, no, I thought he was in this division. I thought he was this. Wait, he's not even a boxer.
See,
like, I just want it to feel – I'm tired of people just downplaying the sport like it's this niche thing because they're treating it the same. They're treating it as, oh, we just do these fights that just are – and they're super, super entertainment. I'm not saying they're not entertaining, but they just kind of go and just – they're doing these one-off little fights. So, I mean, how do you build a strong organization or a strong division or a strong history if the history is marred by all these one-offs that are just going all the way, you know? Like,
well, I was going to say, I mean, I keep hearing people say, you know, like, belts don't matter. And I think belts do still matter. I just think belts don't matter to Conor McGregor. You know what I mean? Like, there's a couple of people that are so far up the food chain – that, yeah, they don't need a belt. But for people that are still coming up and still building, it does mean something.
Well, part of
you
it,
know?
Too, I mean, what, and it is the fact that for a lot of that, money is a big part because that opens up a whole different bargaining point. So I get it that belts do help the money, so I can see where people are going for that. But a lot of these people still have the romantic side of that these belts mean something. I am the champion.
Right.
I went up through the ranks. I fought the guys that were holding it. I won the belt. I am the winner. I'm the winner. I'm the best. I'm here.
For
it
that
is.
Moment in time,
for
it
that
can
moment,
never be taken away.
It can
from
never
you.
Be taken away. You know,
it's the reason I always make sure. You know, like we always refer to people as former champion. You know, like some of our editors get so pissed at me because I go out of my way
former
to make
strike
sure.
Strike Force.
Yeah, and they're like,
oh,
can't we just say? I'm like, dude, don't take that away from that person.
Yeah, like Gagey was one of the ones that I know. You know, how do you not call him a champ? You know, and he's coming in, and you don't want to call him. Oh. The just, number five contender. We don't even do contenders or rankings or whatever. In,
you just don't
in
want
our
to give
titles.
Him that. We just don't want to give him UFC lightweight.
UFC
like,
lightweight.
I'll take away his
Yeah, it kind of takes a little oomph out. So, I mean, I love the fact that there are still fighters out there that I don't want to call it the romantic side of thing because it's a brutal sport, but the fact of they're still achieving what I think everyone as a kid or anyone that's ever been in sport, that belt, that trophy at the end of the year, at the end of the season, you know, they want to see their name at the number one spot.
Mm-hmm.
And by getting these belts and obtaining that, you are putting yourself as the number one at the top of the food chain. And, you know, granted, that does give some benefits to where you can get the money. And if you're in a position like Conor, where he's lucky enough, he can make those money fights, those things without a belt attached. And if that's your goal and you're not going to fight and it's been over a year, just walk, just say, here, I don't need this.
Yep.
I'm just going to just make sure that when I fight, I'm going to get the money that I want to get, you know,
yep.
And let the division move on. Let the, for the love of the sport,
I agree.
Move on. Don't try to hold it hostage for your own ego and for whatever trip that you're doing, because you're still going to get the money that you want to get. You could still pick the fighters that you want to get. But if you love the sport and if you love the organization, well, he does need to love the organization. But if you respect the organization that's trying to keep this alive, you know, just vacate it. Just leave it and then go get your fights and do whatever. I mean, but stop trying to think that the division owes you something by allowing you to hold on to it, because
it
doesn't owe you anything.
That's it. All right, so it sounds like we'll get Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. Of course, we've been trying to get that fight together quite a few times now. It hasn't happened. Hopefully, it's not just snake bit, because I would love to see that fight. Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, whether it's an interim title or an undisputed title, that is a phenomenal fight, and I definitely hope that we see it. I want to ask you, what do you think the tougher fight is for Conor? If that's the way it plays out, is that Tony and Khabib fight, and then the winner gets Conor, which one do you think is a tougher fight? Because I got to say, man, I think they're both really, really, really tough matchups for Conor. I really do. I mean, the wrestling that we saw on display the other day against Edson Barboza from Khabib Nurmagomedov, if he's able to do that, you got to think he's just all over Conor. And I know that was only three rounds, but he certainly didn't look like he was slowing down. I think he could keep going another two rounds, no problem. I will say this. The one thing I will say is that Edson Barboza, where he's dangerous is kicking. I mean, not that he doesn't have good punches, but you need more range. You know what I'm saying? You need more range. Your balance is different. Yep. Connor just needs to punch you. He just needs to land the left hand, and he's really good at kind of that falling away and coming back movement. Yep. So if he's doing that little, you know, pull back and Khabib moves forward and crack him with the left hand, I mean.
Right. Who wins between Connor and Edson Barboza?
I think Connor, but Edson's strong,
Edson's dangerous,
man.
But I mean, when I think of it, I don't have a problem in my mind thinking that with the level
that Connor
of a strike that Connor could almost easily beat him if he keeps distance. The thing is the fact that Connor would want to keep that distance, which keeps you in the kicking range of Edson, so maybe that works better in Edson's favor. But I still don't have a doubt in my mind that Connor would become victorious in that.
Yep.
So it's hard for me to think, oh, okay, what we saw between Edson and Khabib would completely play out.
Right.
Because you're right. I think he has a lot more dangerous weapons when it comes to the hands. You know, when he gets in that close quarters, you know, he's got that fucking sneaky quick uppercut and these other little things that we didn't see that when Khabib was coming in, you weren't catching a lot of that stuff, you know.
And Khabib's definitely – I mean, if there's a place to beat him, it's on the feet. Right, I mean, he's getting better.
Khabib? Oh yeah.
He's getting better, but he's still not the level of definitely not a Connor, definitely not Edson. He's not that level.
No, but when he gets a hold, man, it was vicious. The way he was able to kind of control, and even when he had kind of Edson against the cage, he's reaching around and had that wrist with his right hand and would just teeing off.
I feel like Khabib is a nightmare matchup for Connor, and I'm not saying that Connor is scared. He's not scared of anybody. Now, is it intelligent to avoid the guy that's a nightmare matchup? Yeah, that's called good business if you can do it. But eventually you get to a point where you can't do it unless you switch divisions. But I feel like Khabib is a nightmare matchup for Connor. But the thing is, I feel like Tony has a pretty good chance of beating Khabib, you know, because I feel like Tony, number one, really good on the feet and so just hard to deal with. But the other thing, too, is, you know, when you get on top of him, you know, he's moving. Once Khabib was on top of Edson, you're like, oh, I mean, you could just see it in Edson's eyes. He's like, he's not going anywhere, right? But Khabib on top of Tony's going to be really dangerous. So it's interesting. Like, I feel like Khabib is the worst matchup for Connor, but I feel like Tony is kind of the worst matchup in the division for Khabib. So it's interesting.
Yeah, Tony's he's a very, very dangerous striker, very unorthodox. And you're right, when he gets on his back, he's a very offensive from his guard, whereas difference, it seems to me, Edson was trying to get up.
Right.
Tony would try to keep you. Mm-hmm. If you get him on the ground, he's going to try to stay active. He's going to try to go for a submission.
He'll be spinning for a leg.
He's not going to be trying to get up as easily as Edson. And that was the thing I think that kind of played to Khabib's favor, is that when you don't have an opponent that's trying to attack you, that literally his only goal is to get up. He's trying to get up. He's not trying to hurt me. That means, all right, I just have to control him getting up, and then I can attack him.
Just keep following his hips. Keep following him.
Tony's like, hey, oh, shoot, I got to make sure I don't leave my arm out there.
Yeah.
You know, he might take my arm. Oh, I got to make sure he doesn't slip his legs behind my head. You know, like, he's a lot more dangerous. So you're right. I think it's a very, very dangerous fight for him. I think with Tony and Connor is that, you know, it'd be a striking difference. Mm-hmm. I think both of them were going to be trying to keep it on the feet, but I could see where Tony's like, I get you on the ground. I got you. So hopefully it wouldn't distract him from trying to do these strikes that he does, because I think if anything else, he could probably catch Connor with some of these spinning kicks, something that he's just – because he kind of comes out of the blue with just some of these strikes that he has. I think he has a good way of doing it. I just wouldn't want him to try to get distracted with the whole mindset of that. He knows that if he gets Connor on the ground, he has the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And then put all the other stuff away and just make that the goal of, okay, I'm going to throw a couple jabs, I'm going to throw a kick, then I got to do a takedown attempt. You know,
yep.
I wouldn't want him to do something like that, because then if that's his goal, Connor's going to catch him.
And that changes everything.
He's going to catch him in one of those times, and then he's going to wobble him, and then all that's going to go out the window, and then Connor takes over.
I just hope that I hope that Connor does drop the title, man. I hope that if – maybe he doesn't even wait for the UFC to strip him. You know, maybe he just drops whatever. I think that's fine. I want to see – Tony versus Khabib, and then I want to see the winner versus Connor. And I want to see both of it this year. I hope that we get it. You know, as much as I say, I'm frustrated with Connor. I'm just frustrated with the beg me stuff. I still want to see the guy fight, man. I love the guy's fights, and again, the attention that he brings, the notoriety that he brings to the sport. Like, I just hope we get to see all that play out, because I feel like now, you know, Edson was that guy that was, you know, these guys are the top four in that division. Okay, one guy just got knocked out. You know what I mean? It's like a little round robin we got going on. All right, number four is out of the picture. Now we got this top three, and I want to see them all come together. So,
yeah,
fingers crossed that happens.
Let's get rid of all this interim shit.
Yeah,
let's just get the belt back to what it is, you know?
Get these badass fights on.
It just feels weird. Go to the lightweight page, and there's Connor's picture, and it's like, man, when was the last time you fought?
November 2016.
You know, it's crazy. It is crazy. It is 2018 on the lightweight, like the official belt, if that's the official or whatever.
Has not been defended in 14 months.
And it's not an injury issue.
Yeah. I don't get it. You got to go take the boxing match. But anyway. All right. Well, speaking of keeping everybody in the same division and keeping the belts, it sounds like Dana is leaning towards Cyborg versus Amanda Nunes. So Amanda Nunes moving up to 145 pounds. He says that's the fight to make rather than Megan Anderson. It's been kind of a weird couple of days. You know, everybody kept jumping on this. Cyborg says she wants to fight Megan in Australia. I mean, I asked in the press conference, do you mean in 6 weeks? And Cyborg was like, oh, I don't know about 6 weeks. Like, my hands are kind of hurt a little bit. Like, I don't know about that. I don't know. I said afterwards I was kind of leaning towards the Megan Anderson fight over the Amanda Nunes fights, but it sounds like Dana's leaning in the other direction. I just wonder where they'll try to find a spot for it, because it does. From my understanding, there is going to be a pay per view in Brazil this year. I think June in Rio is the current working plan. I don't know if that's official yet, but I believe that sounds about the right for it. I guess that would be good for it. I mean, would that'd probably be the best spot for it, right? Do Brazil versus Brazil in Brazil?
I think it would finally be one of those cards where I think Brazilians would be like, yes, this is what we've been asking for. I think when Verdum was down there, that was that was a title fight, and I'm glad that they had that. Didn't end their way,
right?
You know, but I know how excited they were. And oops, sorry about that. Cat knocked your phone into the trash can. I'm telling you, he is the most playful little fucker.
Oh, went straight to the trash can. Casa de Cold Coffee comes with some challenges.
But Cyber gets such a huge pop in Brazil. I mean, she gets, without a doubt, like what Anderson used to get when
she's
Anderson
a star
was
right
winning.
Now. She is a star.
She's got to be probably the biggest star. And so it'd be interesting to see her and Amanda, two Brazilians with belts, coming back there. I think it'd be interesting because I wonder if the crowd would actually get tore between the two,
right,
and pick sides, or if it's just a matter of, you know, they're just happy because it's a Brazil wins no matter what. You know, sort of event, but that would be good. I would dig it. I like Amanda. I like her power. I like her chances, but I still just don't see it.
You don't picking a Cyborg in any.
I don't know. Holly took her into deeper waters, but didn't hurt her.
I know.
Even when she got her against the cage,
I thought Holly
she
had the
never
best chance to beat her.
Struck. She held her against the cage, and it was like just. Like, oh, I'm going to tire her out a little bit, but
yeah.
She just took it.
Yep.
And she didn't get tired from it, you know. So that's definitely not the strategy. I guess that's the strategy if you want to take it into, like, a decision or that sort of deal. I don't see Amanda trying to do that. I see Amanda being busier if she does get it to the cage. We did see, I mean, that was a big thing right there. It can be done. People can control Chris against the cage. Whether you can actually do some strikes. I mean, half the time Holly got her against it, and Chris was still throwing knees.
Yep.
You know, so she was more active. I think Amanda probably has a better chance to maybe do it, because Amanda's another one of those women that is just stronger than she looks.
Definitely.
You know, she's very, very strong. So, you know, maybe she'd be a little bit more active. It'd be fun. I wouldn't mind seeing Megan either. I mean, Megan she's been asking for it for a long time. Cyborg been asking for that for a long time. I was excited to see that. I still don't think Megan would fare decently well. I think Amanda probably would fare better than Megan.
Yeah.
You know, but Megan.
At least Megan's a legit featherweight. You know,
yeah.
She's got a title in another organization, and
she has that possibility. She could be an it fighter.
Oh, she definitely.
She's
has
got
it.
The look.
Yep.
She's got the swagger.
Yep.
You know, I love. She's all tatted up. She's
right.
Just like a badass.
Yep.
You know, so I think that's the kind of thing that even casuals can look at it and be like, oh, okay. You know, like,
yep,
here we go. You know, like I can get behind this. I'd hate to start thinking of some of the memes. I'm already overthinking in my head of people, you know, saying, you know, I mean, just for the one, I could see like Beauty versus Beast, you know, the monster, the robot, the cyborg versus the beauty or whatever. I can already see all that bullshit. But man, that would be a fun fight just for the fact that, you know, I love it when these girls call out Cyborg.
Right.
When they ask for it, and then when they get it, and then they get in the cage, and then they taste a couple of those punches, and then they're just like, oh, okay.
You see it on a lot of faces.
Never mind.
You know, you never saw it on Holly's, but you see it on a lot of fighters' faces where they're like, you know, there's been fighters that say they insist on calling her Christiani or whatever. They're like, I won't call her Cyborg. She's got a name. She's a person. You know, they try to humanize her or whatever, you know, but then they get in there and they taste it and they're like, this is not what I signed up for.
But you're right about Holly. Holly weathered it well. I mean, not physically, like her face was tore up towards the end, but she didn't give, there were no tells.
The picture she took with Bruce Buffer at the after party, afterwards. Oh my gosh.
Ugh, I can only imagine the stories Bruce wowed her with.
Bruce has got some stories.
He's got some stories. But no, that should be a fun one.
No, I guess, you know, I just want to see the division built. It's funny. So, kind of, I guess, behind the scenes, we're working on some IT stuff where our rankings for MMA Junkie. Yeah. Right now, we only have women's bantamweight and women's strawweight. So, we're working on some revisions, but we can't just go in there and add more rankings. But what we need to do is we're getting women's flyweight added, we're getting women's pound for pound added. And I said we need to go ahead and have women's featherweight. I mean, if this is a division that has a UFC title in it, then we need to have rankings for it. You know what I mean? And granted, I know it's not going to be easy because, I mean, as far as the division is concerned, the UFC, I think you only have Cyborg. And then so we're going to have to really go outside. And it was funny because we had a little bit of internal dialogue like, hey, do we really want to have a women's featherweight rankings? Especially, you know, we go 15 deep plus 3 honorable mentions when there's only one person on the roster. And I was like, listen, if there's a UFC title and there's a Bellator title as well in the same division, like the two biggest organizations in the world both feature this division and both have champions, yes, we need to have rankings. So I guess maybe that's part of the selfish part of me too is having fights between women that are going to stay at 145. Like, I can't imagine. I mean, maybe Amanda would, if she was able to win both titles, maybe she'd try to defend both, because I guess all it mean would basically be, if she was fighting featherweight, she just wouldn't have to cut weight that week. You know what I mean? So maybe she would try to defend both, but I don't know. It's interesting. I said I like the idea of the fight, and it sounds like that's what they're going to do. I don't know. Maybe they'll do it in Brazil for that pay-per-view. I think that would make a lot of sense. But what I do wonder about, you know, it did seem like maybe they were going, you know, when Cyborg came out right away saying, what about Megan in Australia? You know how sometimes the UFC, like, you can tell, you've been around this game long enough and this company long enough. I mean, you can tell fighters that win that immediately start asking for something else, that you know, somebody's been in their ear saying, oh, by the way, if you win here and you're healthy enough, we sure would like to get you on this card.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I did kind of get a sense that that's what they were trying to do. But after going 5 full rounds and, you know, not getting tagged a lot, but getting touched up a little bit, I did think, well, maybe that's going to be out of the question now. But she kind of mentioned it, and that's why I asked her to clarify about 6 weeks. But it does make me wonder, man, you know, UFC 221 in Perth, it's a good card, and I know it's going to sell out. It's going to sell out from everything we've been told, and it may, you know, I haven't been tracking ticket sales. I really don't track ticket sales in advance. I kind of wait till I get down there usually, but everybody that had told us that, you know, Perth and Western Australia couldn't wait to get the UFC, you know, they do like crazy social numbers and stuff like that. So I'm sure they're going to sell out. And it's got local interest. I mean, you've got Mark Hunt on there against Curtis Blaydes. That's going to sell tickets. Tai Tuivasa is on there. That's going to sell tickets. Jake Matthews is on there. He'll probably sell a few tickets. Tyson Pedro's on there. Damian Brown's on there.
That's good.
Yeah, you got the locals in there. You know, Ben Wynn is in there. You got the Stylebender, the new kid, in there as well.
Australia travels well. That's one thing we've definitely have heard when we've gone to events, that, you know, people have, oh, I came from, you know, Northern Australia or, you know, or Eastern or Western or whatever. And, like, it's a huge country.
Yeah.
So the fact that they travel very, very well. So I think if it doesn't matter, even just the names that's already listed, I could definitely see that event.
It's going to sell out.
For
but
sure.
I do wonder how it's going to do on pay-per-view. Because Whittaker versus Rockhold is a big fight.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, you got Whittaker, who's really weird. God bless Robert Whittaker, man. He is an incredible fighter, but has just been turning down media requests left and right. The UFC's been asking him to do some stuff, and he doesn't want to do it. And I get it. You know, he's so the answer I've been hearing is he's just so focused on training. He doesn't want to break camp. He doesn't want to have to travel all the way from Australia to the United States to hype a fight that's happening in Australia. And man, I get that. I think that's admirable dedication to your craft, but it might be a touch short-sighted as well. I mean, you got to cash in, right? You got to strike while the iron's hot. And not to say that he can't beat Luke Rockhold. He very well could and maybe even should beat Luke Rockhold. But Luke Rockhold's a dangerous fighter that's been elite for a long time. So, you know, your time in the spotlight could be gone before you know it. And it's kind of a weird balance, right? Like, you really do have to stay committed to being the best fighter you can. But I also feel like you got to, you know, maximize your finances and maximize your time in the spotlight. Because this Robert Whittaker versus Luke Rockhold is a very important fight in the division, but I don't know that it feels like a big fight.
Yeah, and I wonder if because I don't think every champ immediately gets points in a pay-per-view either. So at this point, I can definitely see. I mean, it's already going to sell out. I can see where in his mind he's like, "I'm getting my guaranteed money. I'm
going
to get my money regardless. So why am I going to travel? It's not my job to sell it in America. That's your job to sell it, you know.
Fair point.
So I think he's going to do fine over there. So I could see maybe if they switch something up, and maybe that's the sticking point that he's waiting on, the matter of they're not lubing it up enough for him. You know,
Throw me a couple points, and maybe I get on that plane.
I mean, because we saw the promotional things that come out, and it talks about the different events that they have to be willing to do, and a lot of that was about doing it in the country of the event.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that that's not an issue. But, I mean, we've both done that travel over to Australia. It's a long flight.
It's a long flight.
And if you're legit in your training camp, which he would be right now, that's a huge thing. And we've seen many, many fighters before say, hey, don't make me do this during my fight camp.
Yep.
You know, I want to be the best that I can be. So I get it. So, you know, whether or not he comes over here to do one presser during a Vegas event – it's not going to change whether I think most people are going to buy the pay-per-view anyways, because I think, you know, most of those pressers get put on regular TV. I think, if anything else, just do a presser over there and just broadcast it back here. You know, maybe do a Fox, you know, if there's a Fox event, just do a live tie-in to maybe, I don't know, a game or something.
Yeah.
But they could work something where they could promote it where he doesn't have to. But it's so close to the event, and I just don't see it changing. So I could see him sticking to his guns, because at this point, you know, he's doing his part to do what he needs to do to make that fight what it needs to be. And it's not his job, ultimately, to be the one that's – he can't make everybody in America
love him.
It's a
double-edged sword, though, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? If you're like, it's not my job, and then you go, why am I not popular and why am I not making money?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's such a double-edged sword.
If anything, I mean, like, put the little pretty boy, send Rockhold out and around, let him do his thing. I mean, like, he's been gone. I feel like we haven't seen him forever.
And
like,
I think that's why
they should be working him through the market nonstop.
And I think that's what contributes to the fact that this doesn't feel like it maybe as important a fight as it is.
Yeah.
Because Luke's been gone so long.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's fallen out of, you know, what have you done for me lately, right? I mean, out of sight, out of mind. I mean, right? I mean, he was the it boy for a while, right? But now he's been gone so long that I feel like people are like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember Luke Rockhold, you know?
And then seeing what he did to Branch was just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Branch was legit, and Rockhold looked so dominant. But that's the thing. You know, it's like, just take that, package it up in a press conference thingy, and go, here you go. This is the guy that you're going to get. You know, but people like to see Rockhold. They like to – I mean, he speaks well. He sells a fight well. He's a good-looking dude. I mean, the chicks dig him. So, like, throw him out and do stuff. Don't make the other guy that's 15-hour flight or longer flight away have to come over for some – meaningless little press conference that most people aren't even going to tune into,
right?
Except for the diehards. And the diehards,
we're already on the probably going to buy it anyway.
They might buy it already just for the fact of the other people that are doing it, you know. So I don't know. It's tough. I get it that the promotion wants it, but yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think it's not just these fighters in this particular instance. I think it's any international fight. How do you make an American audience want to do it? And you can try to send these fighters, and you can try to you know, send them around and see if they do it. But, you know, how about instead for an international fight or something, drop the price point a little bit so that it makes it more enticing for the American audience to buy something that's out of the market, that's a little bit further away. You know, something, especially if none of these fighters are getting points or whatever, you might be losing a small percentage. But if you're knocking it down to a point to where you have a 10% uptick in buys because it's $10 less, I think it would make up the difference. You know, I think there's different ways they could do it. But just putting these fighters out in front of all these people in these pressers or these random radio hits, that's not going to really sell it. I mean, they got to find a different way to do it. I appreciate when the fighters do want to do it, because I think a lot of them do like to get out there and see things. But I think if they really want to do it, put more of these fighters in the promos. Do specific promos about the individual fights that people might forget about it. Half the time they do the promos, they just do the main, the co-main, and maybe one other fight. You know, yeah. There might be 9 other fights on the card that you have no idea about. You know, make the promos more inclusive of the other fighters. You know, make people understand the full brevity of what a big event it might be, instead of just doing these other things. So, I mean, I agree, fighters should be able to do some of these things, but I think the UFC could try to look internally and try to find ways to be more creative and stop putting everything on the back of these fighters and expect them to go out and sell the things. You know, I mean, they're doing a lot of work.
What are they doing to push Tai Tuivasa? What are they doing to push Li Jingling? What are they doing to push Tyson Pedro?
Yeah.
What are they doing?
We love those cats, and yep. I think most of the diehards, everybody listening,
those are all roadshow guys, right?
Yeah,
there.
These are people we dig, because you know, we've gone out and we've actually been in front of them. You know, I want to hear more of their stories. I know we can do a better job, you know, when we do, when we see them, to try to push these stories out. But you're the organization that's paying their paychecks, for God's sake. Like, do the work to really sell it, and don't just put it on the backs of the main event. You have some other stars in there that can do just as well. And people might be like, oh, that's the difference. I forgot. I love that guy. I didn't know he was fighting on that pay-per-view. Oh, hell. All right, that was enough. I'm going to do it. I'm gonna pull my wallet out and go. And then if there's other little financial things that they can work out, I think there's ways they could do it if they're willing to bend on this, you know, these price points that they put out for these events. Like, don't just always assume that they're going to be $60. Tier them like other things as well, you know, like – they tier fight pass
like boxing does that,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
Boxing does that. You know, like your Mayweather fights, your Pacquiao fights always cost like $10 more than the regular ones do.
For sure. I mean, I think, you know, especially if it's an international one and it might not be at the best hour or something, make it enticing for somebody to want to do it. Because then, hey, maybe instead of saying, all right, I have to budget out because I want to get 2 pay-per-views this year, so I got to budget out like $120. Well, how about we budget out so you get both of those and it's $100?
Yeah.
You know, one could still be $60
kind of,
and the other one could be $40.
They do dynamic pricing with tickets. You know what
I
mean? Like,
that's
become all the thing, which I didn't really realize how prevalent this is now, not just for the UFC, but just like everything. Dynamic pricing, like, everything goes up and down. It's all, you know, as you get closer, maybe it drops or it fails. You know, it's all supply and demand. And, you know, the prices that are announced at the start of the on sale don't necessarily mean the prices that you're going to pay along the way. So maybe you could do the same thing for a pay-per-view.
And I think – and that even happens in music sometimes. Say if you want to go watch an event, you know, sometimes the ticket price starts at one range, and then the day of the show, the ticket's different. I mean, like, they have room to move. They just got to be more flexible, and I think they could probably do a better job of selling the stuff if they're willing to do that sort of stuff. But regardless, I'm excited for that birth card. I think it's outstanding. I think the Rockhold fight and Whitaker fight, I'm at the point where it's like, I can't bet against Whitaker now.
Whitaker, I can't.
What he's able to, what he's done.
I think I'm like 0-7 in picking his fights.
Yeah,
man.
Dude. And now this, you know, not to jinx him, like, all right, I'm going all in on Whitaker, and then Rockhold does what Rockhold does, you know. And
I think, you know, Whitaker, you know, you mentioned like, you know, the long flight. I think the problem is, as you said, we've gone down there quite a bit, the two of us. I think he just needs to take some advice from the roadshow, and that is, you know, just get belligerently drunk.
I was going to say, what, Xanax and whiskey? Or what are we talking about? What flavors should we just
I hesitate, but I told this story to Abby Subban the other day, and he's like, you have to tell that on the show. And I'm like, what? It makes me sound pretty awful. But did I even tell you about my last trip to Sydney?
I don't know. I guess not.
Right.
I don't know.
So – okay, so here's the deal. So the way you get to Sydney from Vegas, obviously you go Vegas to LAX, LAX to Sydney. Now, there were 2 flight options that were the same price. One had a 1-hour layover, one had a 3-hour layover. The thing about LAX is because I'm One World Emerald, I get the good fortune of going into the first class lounge for Qantas Airlines, which is
of course hubba hubba
freaking awesome. They've got like all the liquor you can drink there. They got food that you can order off a menu, so it's not even like a little buffet or whatever, like – it's, you know, nice food that you can order off a menu. And again, cocktails. They've got a shower there, so if you want to take like one quick shower before you get on board. So I booked.
Even though you've just flew.
It took
from
45 minutes.
Vegas. To
you know, get yourself nice and clean.
I'm sweaty, dog. I had like 20 drinks.
So I booked myself the 3-hour layover so I could get nice and toasted. Because here's the thing, it's 15 hours.
Yeah.
It's 15 hours from LAX to Sydney, and you know, you could sleep 8 hours like a normal night, watch a couple of movies, and still have time to kill. And it's not even fun to like watch the map because it's just a plane over water. I mean, it's blue. So my strategy when I go to Sydney is basically just get as drunk as possible and pass out on the plane. As you said, one time you assisted me in that cold coffee in that we drank quite a bit of Jack Daniels, and then you were like, hey, do you want to take this quarter Xanax? And I was like, well, I've never taken a Xanax before. Yes, I will. Well, I mean, I have, but a long time ago. But I was like, yeah, I'll do that. Took the quarter Xanax, literally slept for 15 hours. Like, we took off, and I was asleep before we took off, and, like, we literally touched down. And I was waking up at that time. I slept. I'm assuming at some point I was clinically dead along the way. So I booked a 3-hour layover, and I take full advantage of the 3-hour layover, and I get sufficiently, roadshow ready. I get airplane ready, right? So I'm like, all right. I remember, you know, it's time to go, guys. We got to go get boarded. You know, a couple other people that were on the same flight, including Fiasco Jones, had showed up. He was only on the 1-hour layover, so we had a couple drinks with him. It was like, all right, fellas, you guys ready to go? Let's walk down. Cool, let's walk down. All right. So we head down to go get on the plane. Well, that's all I remember. that's all I remember. So I remember getting up to go. Now, at some point, the next thing I remember is I'm in my seat in the plane, and I wake up, and I'm like, I don't remember walking down here, like, at all. And I look up on the map, and there's 3 hours left. So I've slept like 11 and a half hours, okay? But I'm like, I really don't remember getting here. So I was like, all right, well, then all of a sudden I had the most weirdest feeling. I'm like, did I get my gear? Like, I don't remember grabbing my gear from the lounge. See, so I don't check bags. I only do carry on. Cold Coffee carries more gear than I do, so he has to check his bags. I only carry everything on. So I'm like, I really don't remember getting my gear at all. I'm like, so my computer and my camera may still be sitting in the lounge in LA. I'm like, I'm flying to Australia and may not have any gear. I'm like, okay. All right, hold on. So I remember a UFC buddy of ours that works for the company. I remember, you know, he was with me for the last hour, and I remember him saying he was in row 13, I was in row 11. So I kind of look around just to kind of see where he is, and I turn around, and I happen to catch his eye. Like, he was looking around the same time I was. So we happen to make eye contact, and so I'm kind of looking for something reassuring, like, hey, what's up? Instead, he gives me this look like,
oh, no.
You know, and that's not good radio there, but it's one of those looks like, you know, funny eyes, like, oh, my gosh, can't believe we did that, or you did that, or whatever. I was like, okay, all right, oh, that's not good. That was not the reassuring glance I was looking for. So at this point, I'm like, I have to make sure my gear's here, right? So I'm like, all right, you know, cool. So I get up, you know, stand up. Luckily, I'm on the aisle because I'm always on the aisle. Get up, pull down the luggage bin. My luggage is not there. Push it back up, sit back down. I'm like, fuck. Like, I don't have my gear, dude. Like, I always put my gear right above me where I'm sitting, right? Mm-hmm. It's not there. I'm like, I don't understand why it wouldn't be there. So in my head, I start thinking, okay, what can I do? I know some people that live in Australia. I can maybe borrow some gear off them. I can, you know, and so in my head, I'm figuring an emergency plan of how I'm going to react once I get down there, because I can't call Dan Stupp and be like, bro, listen, here's the deal. I've got to wait an extra 24 hours for my gear to get there, right?
Right.
So, you know, in my head, I've got it. All right, cool. So I'm like, all right. So at this point, there's like 2 hours left. I've been milling in my head for a while. I'm like, all right, 2 hours left on this flight. I'm like, I'm going to go back to sleep, but there's nothing I can do about it now. It's done. It's done. Can't do anything till I land. Going back to sleep. So I try to lay there, and I'm like, trying to, you know, close my eyes, and I'm like, it's just still burning me. I was like, nah, this is not going to work. I was like, I got to search all the places around me.
You didn't go ask the guy to start?
No. Well, because I started thinking, like, I mean, would he pay attention to the fact that I don't have my, you know what I mean? Like,
notice. I would figure, like, if he was with me for the last hour and you thought to look at him, that he probably walked on the plane with him.
Right, but, I mean, yeah, that might have been a good strategy. So, but I get up and I start, I look across the way, right? Pull another one down. None of my gear. I go back, and I'm in the front row of coach, basically. I'm in the very first row of coach. So I check four different luggage containers all around me, and it's not there. And I'm like, I definitely don't have my gear. Like, wow. This is not good. This is not good. And so I sat back down, and I thought, man, like, dude, like, I know we talk sometimes about maybe I drink too much. But I'm like, this is rock bottom, dude. I'm like,
yeah,
this is absolutely rock bottom. Like, I have gotten onto a plane to Australia and do not have my gear with me. I cannot take pictures. I cannot shoot video. I cannot write a story. I can't do anything. Like, this is rock bottom. So at this point now, there's like an hour and a half left, and I'm like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to search every baggage container. Like, I don't care how dumb I look. So I double-checked those four that I was like, maybe I'm still a hazy. I was like, let me double-check these four again. So I double-checked the four in front of me, and I was like, I wouldn't have gone back. That doesn't make any sense. Like, why would I go back behind me? And I was like, I'm going to go out to business. Like, I don't care what they say. Like, I'm going to go out to business, and I'm going to start searching for it. Pull the first one down, but it's not there. And, you know, everybody's kind of looking at me like, what are you doing up here? Like, the hell? Like, get back there, you peon. I'm like, I'm one world emerald bastard. I just didn't get my upgrade. Second one, I pull it down. There's my gear right there. And I'm like, fuck you. Thank God. Thank God. Thank God. Mm-hmm. Thank God. Close the door back up. The flight attendant comes by. She's like, you guys need any beverages? Knowing that I have not hit rock bottom, I'm like, I'll take a white wine, please. Let's keep the party going.
Oh, jeez.
But for
so
like,
you're in the first row, coach.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you just was that is that what do you call it bulkhead?
Yeah, it's got the bulkhead right there.
So you have to put your thing. It's not like you could put a bag
that's
underneath.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm wondering if you were just walking and you just saw an opening and you just immediately
threw it up
stuck
there.
It in there.
It might have been. It might have been. Or like maybe like the one right above us was already taken. I mean, I should have been first on, but I remember leaving the lounge and that's it.
Did you talk to the
Yeah,
the
so
other
the
guy?
Other person, so the other person, by the way, whose name shall remain nameless at this time, but was also involved in the Brazilian brothel story, I was like, I was telling him my story. He's like, what's funny you mention that? He's like, because I also do not remember walking to the plane at all.
Oh, Jesus.
He was like, but I woke up, and he was like, he basically woke up, like the moment that we happened to, you know, lock eyes was the moment that he had just woken up as well. And he was kind of looking around for like, what the hell just happened? Like, where are we? What happened?
Oh, Jesus.
And he was looking around. But his story was much nicer because he woke up, and there was a huge, like, 2-liter bottle of water, like, in his seat back. Like, he doesn't remember leaving the club. But he had the wherewithal to go grab a big bottle of water because he knew he was going to be a little dehydrated. So he fared much better.
Veteran.
Found bonus material. Me, I was worried that I had hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Well, there is a lesson to be learned.
Yes. Ballast Point home game. All right, so another big interview that dropped this week. Jeff Nowitzki with Joe Rogan, man. I thought this was awesome. I rarely get to watch the Joe Rogan Experience live, but you know, he's launched this MMA show now, which I think is really cool. He's, you know, because obviously he gets incredible guests. You know, certainly the connections he has help with that, and you know, the reach that he has is pretty amazing as well. So I don't see why any UFC fighter wouldn't want to go on his program. And you know, he can sit down and do a nice long form with him. So I really love it. Not that his other guests aren't great, but sometimes they're just it's too much for me, man. I live inside the MMA bubble, and sometimes I just, you know, I, when it's too far outside the bubble, I don't get it. But this MMA show, I'm loving. And for Jeff Nowitzki to go on there and spend as much time as he did, a little over 2 hours, I think I actually got a chance to watch it live because I was off and I was kind of working on some stuff around the house. So I got to have it and watch it. But I thought this was cool. And, you know, I don't know how much interaction the general public has had with Jeff Nowitzki. I mean, we've seen him give a couple of statements here and there. He's done a couple of video, you know, interviews, but not a ton. You and I get to see him quite a bit, not only, you know, being on the road, because he's at most of these events. He tries to get there and really help, you know, kind of be hands-on with the athletes and make sure that, you know, they see him face-to-face and they get a chance to know him and they know that they don't need to be worried about him, you know, that he's in their favor. I mean, but I thought this was really cool because the dude is just so, you know, forthright about things. I mean, he's forthcoming, I should say, about things in just willing to address a lot of topics and a lot of situations and just give you as much detail as he can. Of course, he's limited at some point to what he can say. But I thought it was a really, really good interview. And, you know, it's funny. I was I was at Extreme Couture yesterday because my kid was actually working out, but I was working out simultaneously, sir.
Oh.
Yes, now that my kid has been there for several months, he's more comfortable in the classes. He doesn't need me there for reassurance and you know. So I was off to the side, just you know, just
in the
doing
cage,
a little,
get
just
the
doing
cage,
a, just
doing
a little
grappling.
No, no, sir. Not just doing a little treadmill. Just doing. I might get back to MMA training at some point, but I feel kind of. I don't know. I feel kind of weird doing it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, especially if you're going to be in there like people you're supposed to be covering, like there needs to be some kind of like professional distance. I mean, not that I'd be rolling.
I mean, there's definitely
not that I'd be rolling in
talent life.
Not that I'd be like in pro practice rolling, but I don't know. It feels kind of weird. But it was funny. I ran into Todd Duffy of all people,
oh,
who's
yeah.
living in California now, but he's in town, just taking care of a few things in Vegas this week, and he's getting in some work at Extreme Couture while he was there. But it was funny. He walked in, and I'm not sure if he was more shocked just to see me because I hadn't seen him in a while, or if he was shocked because I was on a treadmill. So he definitely had a kind of a funny look. But it was funny because he was just about to listen to the piece as well. He showed me his phone. He was like, "Oh, I'm about to listen to this with Jed Novitzky." I was like, "Oh, bro, I just checked it out." And Todd Duffy, he was like, "Man, this dude." He's like, "This dude is the man." I mean, he's like, "I really like him. Like, this guy is so, like, he's so informative and straightforward and honest." And I don't know, man. It was cool.
That's cool.
I was glad to see him get that piece out there. So
yeah.
I don't know if you'd gotten a chance to check out any of it, but
I
was impressed by it. I think he's a guy that, I don't know, I've been impressed by him and what he's accomplished so far in the UFC.
Sure. No, I didn't know that Joe had started doing these little MMA shows. I know it's awful close to the MMA Road Show, so watch it there, Joseph.
Joseph
Rogan, I got my eye on you. But no, I think that's great. I mean, you're right. I mean, when it comes to a platform and dude that's got his, you know, I mean, we hear as much, you know, you see in a lot of the post-fight interviews, guys like, "Dude, I've been dreaming of this moment of, one, getting the arm raised in the UFC, but then get interviewed by Joe afterwards."
Right.
So I think a lot of guys will probably be clamoring. So, yeah, I mean, I love some of his the cuff, sort of out of this world talks in his regular show. So I'm glad that he has one that's based around just MMA stuff. And Novitzky, man, yeah, he's a good character, man. I've never seen anything that would make me think that he was shady or a bit, you know, like a company dude.
He's
like
the right
guy. I don't see him as like being just like a company guy. I mean, even when we heard talks and we try to poke about certain fighters, you know, and he was for the most part, it was very blatant and saying, like, you know, "I can't say anything that's going to, you know, just, you know, let out fighter information. You know, I could say whatever, you know, up to a certain point, you
mm-hmm.
know." And so he always has the fighters, I don't want to say they're
best interest
because, you know, he is a company guy, but he's not trying to throw people under the bus, you know, just for the sake of for the company.
He's on their side.
He's on their side. So,
he's on their side. I think you're right. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. He's not a company guy, and that's what you want. I mean, I know
yeah.
a lot of people, this USADA program is still, you know, still creates controversy and still isn't necessarily 100% perfect, and he even admits that, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, they continue to get better and they continue to improve. So I think he is definitely the right guy for the job, and he's done some fantastic stuff. But he had some nuggets of news in there too. You know, we had kind of heard some rumblings that John Jones – you know, might be okay. You know, I think we always knew he wasn't going to get that 4 years. I was still of the idea that he was probably going to get two. It sounds like maybe it might go down to, you know, a year and a half. But, you know, Novitzky, I think it's good. You know, he's only able to talk about certain things, but I like the fact that he's kind of honest and saying, "Look, here's what the information tells us. It tells us that he probably didn't do this on purpose." And I think most of us knew that. I think most of us knew that John Jones is not a blatant cheater. He doesn't need to be. He's such a gifted athlete that he doesn't need performance-enhancing drugs to succeed as well. In fact, you know, we used to hear stories. They're grabbing the great Brian Stann was one that used to – I mean, I think he said he almost quit one day because, you know, John Jones showed up, like, still drunk from the night before and just threw him around like a rag doll. And he's like, "Why am I even participating in this sport where this dude is just, like, half-ass trying and he's whipping
yep.
my ass? Like, what am
yep.
I even doing in this sport?" So he's not a guy that needs to cheat. So I am happy because nobody wants to see John Jones away. You want to see John Jones fighting, but – God damn, John Jones, start paying attention to what you're putting in your body, right? I mean, it sounds like
yeah.
from all indications, and we've heard the working theories that it may have been from an illicit drug that was laced with something that showed up on a test, which you certainly can't prove because you can't get the same batch of that illicit drug. But,
yeah.
You know, I know John Jones isn't a cheater, but I also know that, you know, he's a champion. And, you know, you talked about the character and the person and those sort of things, man. Like, bro, like – I hope this has just been a huge, like, I hope this is not a situation where John feels like he, you know, he got out of something again. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I can just keep doing this. Like, they look at this, man. This stuff just keeps sliding right off of me. I keep getting out. I got 9 lives, man. They can't get me. Like, I hope that this is one like, oh, my God, I almost lost my entire career. For the next few years, I have got to be careful what I put in my body. And then once I retire and I'm wealthy, I can do whatever the hell I want.
Right.
Because ain't nobody going to be testing me.
Yep.
But for now, while you're being tested, like, please, John Jones, be careful.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he's ultimately, I mean, he's in such physical shape that his athletic career could go a lot longer, I think, than a lot of people's. So I guess maybe the thought of waiting maybe another 10 years to pop your next dick pill or to try, you know, to party and do a little things, but while you're in your athletic career, especially at this level and at the range he is, it's like, come on, bro. You got to just step away for a little bit, you know. Just keep it to the legalized recreational things, you know, things that, you know, nobody's tainting beer.
They don't test for weed anymore. Yeah. Smoke all the weed you want.
Yeah, smoke some weed, drink some beer, whatever, you know. But you got to – he's too at too high a level that he can't have the right people doing the right things. I mean, if it's about – taking a diet and these supplements and other little sort of stuff, you make enough money that shit shouldn't ever be an issue.
Right.
There's a lot of guys that make a hell of a lot less money than him that haven't ever had an issue. You know, so I think if anything, the money's allowed him to maybe push the boundaries. And I think now with your getting caught and doing these other things, do the right thing and stop that chapter of your life. Get back to what made you great. Now he's got just natural ability that I think most people agree the fact that the dude doesn't need any assistance from anything else. If anything else, the only assistance he needs is to keep him focused, keep him grounded, keep him focused on what the ultimate goal is. And that really needs to come from family. You know, you're not going to get it from anything else. I mean, he has a strong family base. He's got two brothers that have been in the sport, NFL and other things, you know. If anything, I always believe that was probably what pushed him into the NFL. As much as testing as they've had, I know the NFL is about as dirty as any sports organization.
Those are not normal looking human beings.
Yeah, I mean, I even remember hearing in college football, and I know if guys started doing it and were able to start gaming the system in college, it only continued on in their NFL days. So I'm not sure if that was ever something that maybe just planted the seed. I don't want to, you know, guess and say that, oh, hey, maybe this was introduced by a family member or anything of that sort, but that whole mentality, that whole world, maybe that made it easier to think that, oh, well, you know, these top-level athletes can do it, so maybe we can bring that into our sport without realizing that he's such a specimen. He never needed that sort of shit, and what he was doing without really even training was just unreal. You brought up Brian Stann, and I'll bring him up later on because we're going to talk about some other fights. When I was watching the fight, the tough fight that we're going to talk about later on, I was listening to Brian Stann's voice, and it made me realize that for this year, I'm missing the fact that we don't have Brian Stann.
Yeah, right.
You know, we're gonna ran into a new year of not having Brian Stann's analysis on fight stuff, and it made me sad. But to go back to what you said about him, you know, saying like, Jesus, this guy doesn't really even need to train; he's just dominating people. You just feel bad because you know how good Jones could be if he could just keep his shit together to the point of just eat healthy. You don't need to take any fucking supplement. You don't need any supplement at all, even if it's something that's just like, oh, it's a whatever whey protein.
Nope. No, John.
No, you don't. You don't. Just stick to veggies and meat. Meat and potatoes and some veggies, bro, and you got it, you know. And don't eat the meat that Vanderlei Silva and some of these other cats from Brazil have been eating.
But no horse meat.
No horse meat, you know.
No tainted meat from China.
No, none of that stuff from China, but
I hope he comes back. I hope he's back sooner than later, but I hope he cleans up. I hope he cleans up what he's doing because dude, listen, man. It sounds like he's going to get out for a second time from like, look, I didn't intentionally put this in my body, but a third time, and I think people just go, bro.
But even on the second time, that's what, 2 years?
Maybe a year. It doesn't have to be 2 years, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
We'll see.
I would I I was almost thinking that it had to be 4 years. So I'd be surprised if it's anything less than 2 years.
I still think it sounds like they're all optimistic, but I don't know. If my initial assessment was 2 years. I guess I'll stick with that for now. But it just sounds like there's a lot of optimism around everybody. Jeff Nowitzki, you saw Malki Kawa tweeting some things. It sounds like they're all optimistic. Even Brandon Gibson was like tweeting. So I don't know. It sounds like everybody's optimistic.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
But with his skill level, even if he stepped away from 2 years, I was thinking even at 4 years, the dude is still in his athletic prime. I think he ultimately could probably step away from 4 years, and if he still had the drive,
could still
make an impact. 2 years, he could definitely still make an impact. I mean, we saw what George did, you know, and George is at a later part of his prime than where John is by far. But George works really, really hard. I would like to think that John would do the same. So I think even if he got 2 years, I mean, I definitely don't think that would really hurt his career, because I could still see him fighting for another 8 years after that.
He hasn't taken damage.
Yeah.
The other little piece of information that Jeff Nowitzki dropped was that Nick Diaz might be okay to come back and fight. You know, I had thought that basically Nick Diaz – what we heard was that Nick Diaz had whereabouts issues, which basically means three strikes in a 12-month period, and that's considered a negative finding. And I kind of took that as like Nick Diaz – basically flipping the bird to USADA and saying, I'm not doing your little program, your little, you know, tell me where you are program.
Yep.
And that was basically indicating that he had no intention to fight anymore. Jeff kind of indicated that wasn't the case, that I guess Nick had been kind of trusting somebody else to fill out his whereabouts for him, which is probably not a good idea. But if it's somebody you think you can trust and then it backfires on you, you can kind of feel for Nick a little bit. But I would like to see Nick come back and fight again. Nick's a needle mover, man. There's no question about it. He's one of those guys that, again, doesn't have to have a belt involved. Doesn't have to be for anything. Like, you can just put him against anybody, and it's instantly exciting. So I'm that's good news. And it's funny because I'd actually talked to Jeff a little bit, and I need to follow up on it about seeing what it would be like, because you know Jeff and Donna are both enrolled in the whereabouts program, so. And that's Donna Marcolini, employee number one from Zuffa, who's been there forever. But they, she now works on that side of things. She's done operations forever. But they both, because they oversee the program, and they basically take part in the program as well, so that they, you know, when they're talking to the fighters about how best to do it, best practices, like, they can say from experience, because they're actually enrolled in it. They've had to go through their phone and update everything. But I talked to Jeff, like, hey, what if, would you allow a media member to be enrolled in it? Like, maybe that might be kind of cool to see what, because you know, some of these fighters, like, it's a pain in the ass to tell people where I am all the time. I think it might be kind of interesting to do it firsthand, and to, I don't know if people would find that interesting or not, but I don't know, I think it might be kind of cool to do and just see, like, what is it these guys are actually having to do? Like, is it that hard? I mean, we travel a lot, like, we're in a lot of different places. Is it going to be that big of a pain in the ass for you to make sure USADA knows where I am at all time? I don't know, might be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting the fact that certain fighters can kind of make it known that, hey, I'm not fighting right now, I'm not doing this right now, and they don't get tested.
Right.
You know, whereas other fighters say, hey, I'm not fighting right now, I'm not doing it right now, and then they're like, oh, well, you still need to be tested. And now, oh, you're hiding from this test.
Are,
you know,
are you referring to Ronda Rousey?
I might have just looked it up and saw that Ronda did not test at all in 2017. She did test 9 times in 2016. Nick did 2 times in 2016. But yeah, it just seems there's a lot of favoritism played out, where if a guy, I think, should actually be able to say, hey, I'm not retired, but I have no plans to fight for this coming year, whatever. So no, I don't want to test.
Right.
You know, because if you're not going to do it all across the board, and you're giving exemptions, or you're just turning a blind eye for one, and I'm sure there's other ones.
Because Dana went out of his way at that last luncheon we had, right?
She's been tested.
She's in the pool.
She's in the pool.
She won't withdraw herself from the pool.
Her name's in the list. She just has no tests.
That's crazy.
Like, why are there no tests if she's actively – if the treatment's the same? So it just goes to show that – and if we dug deeper – I'm sure there maybe are some other ones in there that we could find. But, yeah, it just doesn't even if that is the golden ticket, that's the only person they allowed that should be – if that, and you're the organization that's supposed to be a third-party organization, you're not underneath the thumb of the UFC, then that same shit should be the same for everybody.
I mean, but okay, in fairness, like if and I guess, I mean, I don't think they give them a bill. I mean, I think they have a working budget, and this is probably something I need to clarify, because what I'm saying is I think USADA gets a certain amount of money, like a fixed amount of money, right? They don't get, like, it's not like every test they do, they invoice.
Not, I don't think they're doing a certain per right. thing. I think they have an agreement.
So here's what I wonder is, if you know that you've got a fixed amount of money and you've got to stretch it out over, you know, X number of tests, I mean, if you're an administrator of the program, you know Rhonda hasn't looked great in her last two fights. You know that she was a former Olympian that, you know, had always kind of spoken out against PEDs. You know that she hasn't really had any, you know, intentions or, you know, announced anything. It doesn't look like she'll fight again. Is it the prudent thing financially to do to not test her? Or are you being unfair by saying, what if she's just doing steroids this whole time and then she's going to come back and test clean? You know what I mean? Like, maybe she's getting a free year of steroids. So is it, you know, is it the prudent thing financially to not test her?
Right.
Maybe. Maybe it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe it's not so unfair, like she's getting favoritism or what have you.
I'm not seeing anything from Paige VanZant in 2017. Why is that?
I don't know. Blonde girls don't take
blonde
drugs.
Blonde girls don't take tests?
blonde girls don't do drugs?
She didn't change her name that I can see. I see her for 2016. Why don't I see her for 2017?
She didn't get tested at all in 2017?
I see nothing's popping up under Paige VanZant under sports. Mixed martial arts, 2017. 2016, it shows her at, let's see what it says. It said four times. And 2017 shows no times.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Didn't she fight in 2017? No, she didn't. Did she? Has she? When's the last time she fought?
Yeah, she's fought.
I feel like she's fought.
She definitely fought because she fought up in. Didn't she lose up in Sacramento, right? Oh no, that was 16. Holy crap! She didn't fight at all in 2017.
I was starting to feel like
I thought that Sacramento fight was in 2017.
So yeah, December 17th. It's been over a year since she's fought.
I did not realize that. I really thought that was last year.
Yeah. So why didn't she get tested? Because they knew she was off doing Dancing with the Stars or whatever. No, that was 2016 as well. Because it was at the same time she was fighting.
Well, she was scheduled to fight. She was scheduled to fight against Jessica Ai, and then she had a back injury or something like that and had to pull out. But I thought that loss to Watterson was in 17. Interesting. All right. Well,
yeah,
listen.
So it's
blonde
weird.
Girls don't get tested.
Blonde girls don't get tested. So if Nick Diaz was a blonde girl, then there would be no issue about him skipping tests.
All right. Let's talk about the.
But
end
I
of
do
year.
Want to see him back. I love the Diaz brothers. I want to see the Diaz, and they have certainly a lower price point than Conor McGregor.
Mm.
That with the right card, and it say if $15 million is it, which is that is crazy because he doesn't draw $50 million worth of tickets, but if the dude wants $3 million. Give it to him.
Yeah.
Give it to him. Just bring him back, man. The dude, he's fun. It was certainly a pain in the ass at times while I worked for the UFC to cover him because he certainly was probably the original show up when he wanted to character, especially when it came to open workouts and all other stuff. Like, no one did it like the Diaz brothers. I mean,
Stockton, California is apparently a settlement of Brazil.
Yeah, right? They're all descendants of Brazil. They all have Brazil time built in. But they are a fun bunch of brothers, man, and they are true martial artists. They live and breathe that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to how they treat it themselves. Maybe not during fight week when you see how they interact with other fighters, you might think that's not very martial arts like but in their discipline and their belief and how they work themselves out, they fully buy into it for themselves, so it's fun to watch. Just don't expect him to be on time for a lot of things.
At all. All right, so listen, I want to talk real quickly about the our end-of-year MMA Junkie Awards. And normally I wouldn't spend a lot of time on this because they're actually still rolling out. We're rolling out a couple of these awards every year. But here's what we did this year. You know, we've got a big staff. And it's kind of a pain in the ass for everybody to vote on everything and then to tally everything up. So what they did was they gave everybody a couple of categories and said, here, you do this, you do this. And everybody kind of came up with what they wanted. They submitted it to the staff, and they're like, do you guys have a problem with this? If so, you know, let me know. And we did have some. We changed it a little bit. You know, I think you're on the right track here, but let's go with this instead. And people, oh, okay. So, you know, it was a communicative effort, but at the same time, you know, we had people that were in charge of. Now, I was in charge of Gym of the Year, and round of the year. And let's start with gym of the year, because I took some grief for this. I kind of get it. I knew I was going a little non-traditional with it, but I took some grief on it. None other than the UFC's own Elvis Sinisic spoke against me. But for the gym of the year, I chose the UFC Performance Institute. Now, I get it. Gym of the year usually means like team of the year. Like normally you're saying like you'll go with Team Alpha Male. Even though Team Alpha Male isn't a gym, Uriah Faber's Ultimate Fitness is the gym, but it's normally picking a team that had the best year, right? I mean, American Top Team is always there. Jackson Wink MMA is always there just because they have so many fighters, you know, accomplishing things. Again, Team Alpha Male, I thought, was having a great year. Of course, then you had the Garbrandt loss and the Calvillo loss to kind of close things out. So that kind of, you know, slowed things down a little bit for them. But I was like, you know what? Based on all the interactions that we've had at the UFC Performance Institute this year, I mean, it opened this year in May. It served as the home camp for Conor McGregor during his boxing. It's serving as the home camp for Francis Ngannou as he's making his way up the ranks. You know, Joseph Benavidez is there rehabbing all the time, you know, taking advantage of the free rehab stuff. You know, we talked to Duncan French the other day. He said that their stats show that 40% of the UFC roster has already taken advantage of the Performance Institute. You got more and more fighters that are choosing to move out this way or to make sure that at least part of their camp is here. You know, Emil Meek is a guy that just broke camp basically down there and said that he's going to make sure the Performance Institute is a part of every camp he has moving forward. So to me, this was the gym that had the biggest impact on the biggest number of people and, you know, had the biggest, you know, potential to change the sport, change the game. I get it. It's a little non-traditional, and I even put that in my accompanying text about it. It's a non-traditional winner. But I caught a lot of shit, and now I'm wondering. I thought I was making an intelligent decision and making an intelligent selection, and now I wonder, Cold Coffee, was it an educated decision, or was I trying to be too hipster there, and I dropped the ball?
You're so hipster. I no, because I thought the exact same thing when I, you know, was thinking of a gym that most fighters were ranting and raving about how it's been changing the sport, and let alone, you know, we've been seeing it rehabilitate guys, all this other stuff. It's the one that stood out in my head. Korean, I think, well, there's always, of course, maybe people just want to hear, you know, they want to hear Jackson Wink, they want to hear Alliance, they want to hear whatever, you know. But I think when it came to, you know, gyms that have contributed to guys just taking it to another level for this particular burst, and this is the year where they really came out and did things. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that can beat what the PI was able to do.
That first-year impact, what they've already been able to do. I mean, I don't even know that they'd be eligible to win the award next year. You know what I'm saying? But I thought it was kind of a statement thing. You know, here's this brand-new facility, and, yeah, they don't have coaches per se, but they do have strength and conditioning. They do have rehab facilities. They do have nutrition, which a lot of times, man, that's the thing that we've realized, or at least, you know, in my 20 years of following the sport and, what, 12 years of covering it professionally or whatever, the one thing that I've definitely realized is that, you know, the nutrition and, like, kind of strength and conditioning, like, real, like, not just kind of a raw approach to a professional, that's usually the last thing that fighters get. You know what I mean? Usually they get the martial arts training, but they don't have, like, the real quality, like, physical, like, bodybuilding type training, you know what I mean, and rehab, and I feel like, you know, this is an opportunity to add those things. So I don't know, man. I thought it was a good choice, and then there were people just shitting on me and shitting on MMA Junkie.
Well, people always do that. Well, I mean, people have their favorites of gyms. People always want to hear it. So I mean, I think anytime you could possibly step out and pull something different, you know, people can have issues, so it is what it is, you know. But next year, PI won't be that gym.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the year for the PI to really come out, so next year, I'm sure a more traditional gym will be back on top.
So I would agree. So the other one I was in charge of was round of the year. And here's an interesting, too. So to me, you know, a fight that stuck with me all year, Justin Gaethje versus Michael Johnson, and I think that'll probably be our fight of the year. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the final tallies on that. But I mean, I think that's a lot of people's fight of the year selection. But to me, and I another one here where I kind of felt bad knowing that it's probably going to be our fight of the year to pick a round from it and make it round of the year. But I remember being so stirred emotionally by that fight and by those rounds, you know, that they stuck with me all year long. But the interesting thing here is that once I had made my selection, started writing my piece, and I turned it in, I saw the other websites and had chosen round of the year from that fight as well. But the interesting part is I chose round one, and I saw a lot of other people choosing round two. So I kind of wanted to ask you, because I went back and I rewatched the fight, right? And I was like, I know it's got to be one of these two rounds. Let me go back and watch them both. So I went back and watched them both a couple of times. And the thing about it was, the first round, you know, to have a round of the year, I think, you know, you got to have some back and forth, right? I mean, you got to have one guy winning for a little bit, one guy winning for a little bit. You know, it's got to be that back and forth. And I just thought the intense pace that they had, the fact that they were just nonstop, relentless, throwing strikes. I think I broke it down using Fight Metric, and there was basically one strike thrown every second and a half for the full 5 minutes. I mean, that's how fast the pace was. You know, you had each of them rocking each other. You know, Michael Johnson's trying to finish it at the end of the first round and nearly almost has the finish, doesn't quite get it. Justin Gaethje survives. Amazing. And then the second round was incredible as well, especially because, you know, Gaethje is basically knocked out on his feet, and then he comes back and knocks out Michael Johnson. So that round was more like emotional to me. Like, it was more like the seesaw was different. But by that point, they had already gone through the first round, so they didn't have quite the high pace. They weren't quite as technical at that point. You know, it was a little more like, I don't want to say sloppy, but at that point, it had devolved into a little bit more of a brawl versus just like technical back and forth. So I don't know. I ended up going with round one, and I see why a lot of people went with round two. But I don't know. I kind of want to get your input on that too, because then I started thinking, well, am I crazy? You know, because again, the highs and the lows were much different in round two, but I felt like the constant pace and the constant back and forth of round one made it a slightly better round for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was much more technical. I think it had its points where there was more nonstop action in the first round. But in the second round, there was a sort of a gap in the middle after Gaethje. Man, he's got a chin. He's got heart. You're right. I love the second round for the fact of there is both guys were hurt and eventually you get the finish. But there was that lull in the middle of the second one that kind of takes away from the nonstop action that happened in the first one.
Yes.
But if you take it as for a round where I think even the first one, both guys kind of got wobbled. Justin got dropped at the end, but Michael did get hurt early on. But you really see the how bad these guys got wobbled in the second round.
Right.
So I could definitely see where people are like, oh, so back and forth, so back and forth. So I would probably lean towards the second, but I do see where that part in the middle, probably around the, I think it was around the 2.5 minutes left or something, where it kind of just got like, okay.
Yeah, you just got two exhausted guys.
Two exhausted guys kind of going and just sort of throwing it. But man, it was uppercuts, man. It was like a tale of uppercuts. And I like it because I actually, when I was going back and watched this fight, I actually went back and watched the Alvarez fight as well and watched how Justin was treating those leg kicks, whether a guy was coming in as a southpaw or whether a guy was coming in orthodox or regular. But he still just attacks those legs, and it was vicious. But he got away from it more so in, I think, the Johnson fight, because I think he felt like he wanted to knock him out more, maybe make an impression or something, which set him up to get those strikes that you know, eventually kind of hobbled him a little bit. But man, when he got to the cage, he was able to get his bearings and then came back out. And then I think that's why that there was that little lull, because both guys were just like, well, shit, now we're really tired. I haven't been able to finish him, you know. And I think Michael was probably just like, what the hell? Like, this dude just keeps coming. And then eventually Justin got the best of it. But that was a really, really good fight. I could definitely see why somebody would say that would be a fight of the year. Round is a little tough.
It's hard, man.
It is tough.
I will say it is hard to pick a round. You know what I mean? But I think what it was.
Why do it to yourself? That's so tough.
I know. That's the one I got given, dude. I was like, God damn it. That's the one I got. But I do. You know what I mean, we watch so many fights, either from cage side or on TV or on the back or whatever. And I just remember just, again, the emotion, man. It was just like, it was a fight where, honestly, bro, I had to like, you know, and I had to stop myself from like, I just wanted to clap. You know what I mean? I just wanted to be like, God, you guys are warriors, man. You guys are incredible warriors. And it was a tough. So I don't know. My two picks got universally – well, I shouldn't say the one got shelled, but the Performance Institute got kind of shit on. So and then I saw – maybe I picked the wrong round. Maybe I'm not a good award picker.
Yeah, well, there are always going to be haters.
There's always
going to
be
haters.
All right, listen. It's a week off, so we shouldn't take too much of people's time. I appreciate anybody that's tuning in. I know people probably just like to listen to us when we're on site. You know what I mean? We're actually giving some knowledge from behind the scenes. So we'll wrap it up quick. We are going to be busy. I'm going to go to St. Louis next week. You're going to go to Boston along with Matt Erickson the week after that. I'm going to be in L.A. that week, so we'll have both events covered there. You're going to go to North Carolina after that. I'm going to go to Temecula, so we'll have both Bellator and UFC covered there. So we got a lot going in the next 3 weeks. It sounds like Saturday, I think we're going to go shoot. Bang Lugwood's going to be in town at Extreme Couture. He's going to be doing a seminar over there, but he's also going to be doing some stuff with the pros. So we might have a little something with Bang Ludwig doing some training over there at Extreme Couture. So that'd be something we can bring to you next week. You know what? We haven't heard an announcement yet, but I've heard it's coming. I want to see the Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series fights come back, man. Those are fun.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
I enjoy doing those, man. Kind of getting to see those up and coming prospects and doing it, in that small environment where everything's on the line, man. It's really cool, man. So I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, we're gonna go finish up doing our day drinking and being responsible. And then we'll get to the gym.
Yeah.
Maybe not today, but
yeah.
Or not. Thanks for listening.